Hello and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And we took last week off because one of our hosts was not feeling too well, but now Daryl is back. His voice sounds beautiful right now, and so I'm excited to be here to talk about Selling Sunset, because part of the reason we couldn't do without Daryl was because the idea of having an episode about Selling Sunset without Daryl was just unbearable. That is a new reality show on Netflix, which we'll be reviewing shortly. One thing I wanted to touch on before we got to that is a story that Sarah Perez wrote a few days ago. Netflix is testing a shuffle play button. And what that means is basically you just hit a shuffle button. You could potentially hit a shuffle button in Netflix and it'll just start playing random shit that it thinks you're gonna like. Do you think you would use that?
A shuffle button?
It's kind of like channel surfing on regular TV. But I don't know. I think it would make me really mad. It depends on if it pulls from the full range of content. Because if it pulls from like highly story-driven dramas and stuff, like I feel like that would be awful. But if it pulls from like, I saw somebody talking about Modern Family, like that's great, right? Like anything that's like a syndicated, contained sitcom or their growing library of reality TV, I could probably just dip in and out and be very happy with that.
Right.
This is Hulu?
No, this Netflix. Netflix.
Oh, no. I don't think so.
This is another moment where the fact that this is audio only is really letting us down, because yeah. Jordan's expression of just utter disinterest is really good right now. Just no, thank you.
I think that Netflix already does so much to like suggest shows for you, like based on the fact that you watched a crime thriller with a strong female lead, right? And like autoplays, I mean, I think you guys probably turned this off, but like autoplays the trailer, and like yes, there are like millions of titles on Netflix, but there's also like pretty solid discoverability in my opinion. And I don't know, I'm also like a purist. I think like you pick a show and you watch it whether you like it or not all the way through to the very end, and then you pick a new show and you watch it all the way through to the very end, and so on and so forth.
But what about if you discover things you never would have been suggested? This is the real wild roll of the dice, although we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it could be like, who knows what it'll show you, like something you would never pick from the main feed, and then maybe you'll love it.
Or maybe there's a reason I would never pick it from the main feed. And it's like,
yeah, it's your biases. Just your old built-in.
Just out here accusing me. I mean, I think it's called preferences when it's TV shows, right? But
yeah.
I don't know. It just depends on what it is, I guess. But probably not is where I land on that.
I was super against it when I first heard about it, but the more I think about it, the more I feel like I could randomly do it. Sometimes it's just like those nights where I'm just like, I don't want to spend 10 minutes deciding what to watch. I'll just start and let's see what happens. I could imagine doing that. I agree that like if it's like a super serialized story-driven show, that would be kind of weird. Even if it was starting you with the first episode, it would still feel
strange.
Does
it always
strange.
Start you with the first episode? Or is it literally just like one episode of this, one episode of that, and it doesn't really matter what it is?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it's random episodes sometimes, but it's a test, so who knows?
Weird.
I mean, like some shows, it doesn't. It's like Daryl said, channel surfing, right? That sometimes you change mm-hmm. channel and there's a random episode of some sitcom on.
And you're like, oh yeah, this is nice. You watch it through.
Yeah.
You
know.
Like how you are with Big Bang Theory sometimes.
Yeah. Like how I just love to dip in and out of Big Bang Theory or relive my favorite moments.
Turn
like
on the TV.
Shelby
six channels.
Says Godzooks or whatever.
Sheldon.
That's not his catchphrase.
It's Bazinga. It's not Gadzooks. As he wears his bloomers, you sound like you're from the 20s. It's Bazinga. It's very hip. It's
oh,
very
I
current.
See. Okay, my apologies.
Shelby, you're such a mess. I mean, literally, you could turn on like 7 or 8 channels, and Big Bang Theory could be playing at any moment on any one of them.
That's sad. But see, here's what I did as an alternative to this. So this is why I think it's kind of a good idea. I was, I guess, just, you know, as the pandemic goes on and I've run out of stuff to watch, I kind of like, I was like, oh, I just want something that's like mindless that I can throw on. And I've watched basically all of Netflix's DIY or Reno or whatever content that they have. So I subscribe to, we have this, like, it's an Amazon Prime premium channel thing, and it's just basically, it contains HGTV. It contains a whole bunch of stuff, but HGTV is one of them. Food Network is another one. And then I just can watch live HGTV. So I have that on a lot, and it's just like, okay, whatever. Like, yeah, House Hunters International, like, et cetera, et cetera. Like, the worst spinoff of House Hunters. They actually have a show now that's really good called House Hunters Comedians on Couches, and it's just comedians watch episodes of House Hunters on Zoom and then make fun of it, and it's wonderful. But
there's a lot of layers to that.
Yeah, I know. But this, like, that's like what the Netflix thing would accomplish for me. Like, I think that's probably why they're putting it in now rather than, I bet they're seeing tons of people just scroll their feed and be like, oh, I don't know. And yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how it turns out if it gets rolled out more broadly. And of course, if people don't like it, they don't have to use it. So in that sense, bring it on. Try it out. I don't know how I'll feel about it once it's actually live, even though intellectually I think it's not a terrible idea. Let's move on to Selling Sunset, which, Daryl, you recommended we watch. So I think we actually talked a little bit about it on a previous episode, and I just genuinely could not understand what you were talking about, because I just kept being like, it's a show about selling houses? And yes. Yeah, maybe just explain how you found this show and why you like it.
Yeah, tell us how this all happened to us.
How did I find this show? I don't know. I mean, it probably just came up as suggested in my Netflix viewing, because it is along the lines of what I would watch. And it shares the same showrunner, creator, whatever, executive producer as The Hills and, mm-hmm. You know, I think Laguna Beach or whatever. So that's very much my aesthetic. I like that kind of reality show. And yeah, it's got real estate too, which I also like watching real estate shows.
Like, it would be the first thing on Daryl's shuffle, essentially.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. So then I started watching it, and like, it really sucks you in, because it has a plot driven element in that the one newbie real estate agent is Chriselle. I forget what her last name is.
Is she one of the blonde ones?
No, she's the one who is married to Justin Hartley. Joke. Chriselle Stouse. Oh, and she's the only non-blonde one, I guess. Or one of two, right?
Is she the one with the accent?
No, she's wonderful, actually, the one you're talking about. That's Maya.
Yeah, Vander. I like her.
Yeah. No, Chriselle is the one, I don't know how to she has a very big face, like a very Hollywood face. She was on like soap operas and stuff, and then she married the guy from This Is Us.
I'm just gonna Google it.
And then they had drama. But yeah, like, it was like, oh, look, like, she's the new one coming in. She's got to get into the real estate game from being an actress or whatever. And yeah, it's a weird name.
All of them kind of have kind of amazing names. I mean, a lot of them, at least. Like, yeah, Chriselle, Maya Vander, Davina Potratz, Amanda Smith.
Amanza, yeah.
Right. But then we've also got a Heather Young. So we're covering really all our bases here.
Yeah. But I like those shows, and I've the Bravo style ones where that's like $1 million listing, or like, I don't really like those that much. Like, they're they lean a bit too much into the, I just don't like the way they're shot, basically. Like, this is just really nicely shot, and it does actually, I read an interview where they were like, well, we think it's important that it emphasizes the homes a lot more, and it does do a lot on the homes. Like, there are a lot of just like, you know, pretty nice vanity shots of these like really nice LA homes, which I enjoy. Yeah, I don't know, it's good. It's addictive, like crap TV watching, where you just like want to see the next one, and they have their own little internal dramas, and they're engaging and fun.
Jordan, as a fellow reality TV fan, what do you think of this show?
I maybe didn't give it the attention that it warranted, but I just...
You probably gave it the exact amount of attention it warranted.
Well, maybe. Maybe not the amount of attention Daryl would have preferred. I just couldn't, like, really get into it. I also, and, like, speaking of biases, like, the... I don't know if I should worry about saying this and being offensive or not. I don't know, like, the whole, like, fake boob job Botox LA thing is not, like, the part of reality television that I am attached to. And this seems like it's, like, a full, if this is, like, a three-layer cake, it's, like, a full whole layer of the cake is that. And I just... don't like that layer of the cake, and so it makes me not want to eat the cake as much.
I would almost say that it's not just one layer of the cake, it's the whole cake. Like, that's what you're and that's
it's
like
the frosting that permeates the entire every bite.
Before we started this podcast, like, I really was not someone who watched a lot of reality TV, but we've done that for the show. It's also been a big part of Netflix.
I didn't watch much comic book TV before the podcast.
We try to be open-minded to each other's tastes, and but, like, there's a kind of reality TV that I think has been popular on Netflix that I like, that's sort of the maybe not super accurate or super deep, but fundamentally, you know, life-affirming, heartstring-tugging, Queer Eye being, of course, the kind of biggest example of this.
Right.
And I discovered that I like that kind of TV. I didn't realize that, and now I know. What I had really stayed away from was the more kind of dramatic reality television, the more kind of, like, that's all about the drama between the characters. And I can't say that, I definitely don't think this is a good show. Or I don't think, like, the, what I would say is that there's certainly no redeeming value to this show, and that almost all the people being filmed are bad people.
Oh, I was worried about being offensive. Thank you.
but it is entertaining. I did, at first I was just like, I can't, and I should say I dove in with season three, because that's the most recent season that just came out. And I thought, like, I'll just watch a couple of episodes and have enough that I have a sense of what's, you know, going on. And I just made it through the whole season because I did find it really watchable. Because of that, so it takes place at this real estate brokerage called the Oppenheim Group, and at least in terms of what we see featured on the show, it's these really high-value homes in LA, and especially in the Hollywood Hills. I was talking about the show with my girlfriend Julie, and at one point she's like, "So what are the prices that we're talking about?" And I said, "I guess I'd probably be very surprised if we see any homes that are less than $2 million," and in fact, I think at one point, Jason, who runs the brokerage, mentions a $1.6 million home, but it's, like, to him, so little that it's not worth really talking about or even featuring on the show. They're just like, oh, yeah, why don't you take care of this $1.6 million home? It'll just bring in a little extra cash. Let's not bother talking about it. So it's really homes that are, like, in the $4, $5, $6, $7, $8 million range. Or there's one home that's in the
$70 million.
Yeah. And...
yeah, it was like, yeah. I paid close attention
that
to
that. That was good.
that was really interesting for a number of reasons. So the show then tries to balance basically the real estate porn of it, where you
does
show...
Does it try to balance it? I could do it like 80% more real estate porn.
I would say that it has elements of both real estate porn and then just drama between the different characters, sometimes tied to their work, oftentimes not. But I agree that the real estate porn I eventually got into, the drama about, like, whether or not somebody thinks their fiance is cheating, or I don't think, you know, I think we decided this, there aren't really spoilers for this show because, A, nothing is really a twist, and a lot of this stuff has already been sort of reported by, like, entertainment sites and tabloids and stuff. This woman, Chriselle, like, she eventually gets divorced, or her husband, Justin Hartley, from This Is Us, files for divorce. And so there's, like, this whole storyline about her divorce. And again, like, I don't know the inside story. I'm not going to say, like, you know, I mean, I'm sure it was like actually really, really horrible.
Whose side are you taking? Like, you're taking sides? Is that
what you're saying? Oh, we can get to that because, oh my God. But like fundamentally, as a story, as a piece of like reality television, I found it completely ineffective because to me, all the pleasure of the show before was like looking at these beautiful houses, getting a little bit of a sense of how this brokerage worked and the stakes when they're trying to sell these houses, you know, in some cases renovate and sell these houses. But in terms of like caring about any of the agents as people, like I felt nothing. And so like when you have like a whole episode devoted to her pain from her divorce, I sort of just sat there was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that I would feel something too if they weren't all like so fake. Like I could actually get on board with a show about drama and real estate combined. But like I just didn't care about anybody because they none of them seemed relatable. In fact, the most relatable person on the entire show for me was a client that who's the one that has the platinum blonde hair and she's getting married and she has like she wears a dark red lip and she's planning her wedding. She wants to wear a black wedding dress.
Oh, Christine.
Yeah, Christine.
Christine. So Christine is talking to a client in like the second or third episode and she's like, so I do a lot of cute things for my open houses and I'm thinking peacocks. And the client is like, how about no birds? And like that to me was the most relatable moment of the entire show. Or someone was like, I don't think we should have birds.
Yeah, that was, I think that was the co-listing agent. That one was really good because then she was also like, oh, and we'll do burgers and Botox. And then everyone was like, no. And then she like shows up at the agent showing and it is a burgers and Botox party. She just fully burgers was like, Botox. No, I'm going to ignore you and do this crazy thing. And then all of them congratulate her. And it was wild to me. It was just so crazy because it's
that
like,
was like popular.
All of you are, but all of her guests are her people from her agency. Like, what? Like, and then there's like four other people. Like, of course they're going to like it. Like, they're just, it's the deck is stacked, right? But.
Well, didn't Chrissy Teigen say like, oh, these aren't real?
She people. Did. I've seen some rebuttals to that already. And Chrishell had a rebuttal and stuff. But like, I don't necessarily think
Chrishell's objective.
Yeah, but I don't think Chrissy Teigen is objective either. And I think I don't necessarily think she knows. Like, okay, I talked to some LA real estate people. Like, okay, great. But like, the Oppenheimers really are real estate people. I don't know about their whole all of their agents. Maybe it's just the Oppenheimers.
And are the Oppenheimers the little dudes?
The little boys, yeah.
Oh, Oppenheims, yeah.
Yeah.
The twins, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also didn't like that dynamic in general.
What
these two guys have like an army of, you know, women like working for them and competing to get the listings that they want and stuff.
Well, I think they're upfront about that in some episodes. I think they even like talk about their strategy.
They, like, address it.
Yeah. It's not.
I'm just saying as a dynamic, like of the things that could like. In order to enjoy, in my opinion, a reality television show, you have to have several ingredients character-wise, right? You have, like, think about The Bachelor. You have the one person, maybe two if you're lucky in a season, that feels like a real human being, right? Like a Caitlin Bristow or someone where you're like, that person actually thinks this is hilarious and is just out here having fun and, like, talking to the audience. We're her friends. Like, you're cool. And then you have, like, the couple people who are 100% characters, but like protagonist characters where you're like, oh yeah, like I don't actually think they're a real person, but like I'm rooting for them and their happiness. And then you have like the villain and then you have like these crazy people that you don't like. And it just felt like everyone in this show is the crazy person that you don't like. And like there was no one who was like, oh yeah, you're talking directly to me and I think you're a relatable person. Or like, even though you're not a real person, I at least am rooting for you. Like I didn't feel that with any of them. So it's like, I don't know.
I would say that I agree with that to an extent, that maybe the closest to relatable people are Jason, who runs the brokerage, who is mostly not here for the drama and it's just like, let's sell some houses, but he's not relatable because he's the boss, and so like you can't really have that.
The Oppenheimers aren't relatable because they're super weird too, right? Like they're constantly on about
Oppenheims,
like,
Daryl, Oppenheims.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Oppenheimer is the father of the atomic bomb. Yeah.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, different.
And Fred is just kind of there.
Yeah, they're just kind of there.
He's not the boss.
But when they do talk, they expose how ridiculous their lives are, right? Like, they're like, they've dated most or a couple of the agents in their business. Yeah. And then they're like constantly buying new houses and like, oh, yeah, like I'm in the middle of like redoing this house. But then it seems like as soon as they're done redoing it, they're buying a new house. And then they're talking about like their dating life, like they're like 15-year-olds, but they're like 45-year-old weird dudes, right? Like there's all kinds of they're not normal people, and they're not people that you can either relate to or admire their character. Like they're just super strange people. I feel like the most relatable people are like Maya. Like I would find Maya relatable because she's like, she seems to be the least about the bullshit. Like she's just like, oh, like this is a dumb thing. Like she's very direct in all of her statements and it's fun, but she figures less in the later seasons. She's much more prominent in the earlier seasons. And then in this one, she's kind of like half in, half out because she's pregnant and she's going back and forth between Florida, I guess. So that's a bit difficult. But she's great in the earlier seasons. And then if you watch those, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, and then it's even better because in this one, she's kind of like, I'm not involved in any of this shit because I'm smart.
Yeah. I mean, the other person who I think is relatable is Amanda, who... In this season is, you know, new to the brokerage as an agent. I think she was somebody who basically like set up, I forget the exact term, but was, you know.
Yeah, she's like a stager a designer. Stager,
exactly.
Yeah.
And like she's also going through what seems like a custody battle for her kids. And it seems like there's a lot of, you know, just stuff going on her, like real stakes in her life. But the way the show treats that is very strange because they let her talk about it a little, but also every other person on the show is just kind of a monster about it. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe she didn't show up. She like went to court. Like, what a flake.
Yeah.
She's like, no, I kind of think the court thing you kind of got to deal with. Like,
I didn't sympathize because she seems to be a serial late person, and I have no sympathy for serial late people in any venue for any reason. Like, no, that's the one.
Yeah,
thing
and that's the tension is that like that she's set up to be like she's. I think the show portrays her as a flake, and maybe she is a real flake, but also she's the only one who seems to be dealing with genuine economic hardship.
Yeah, that's true. I think the only closest, like one of them lives in a relatively small condo with, and then there was no diamond ring. That was a bit of drama. I think that was in the earlier seasons. like Romain, who they keep calling Romaine, and what is it, Mary? Like those two, that couple. So Romain got her a ring that was like not a diamond, and then everyone was like, "That fucking sucks. You're poor," and like they were all making fun. It was awful. And
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's like bullshit. Like,
but that's why I think like bullshit. In some ways. You're right. So that was kind of a long way of saying I agree that there's no real sort of protagonist or hero character, and instead you just get villains and people who are varying degrees of effective at that. And so my favorite was probably Christine, who I at first had a hard time with because she is, at least as she acts on the show, just like completely monstrous and terrible. But then at a certain point you're like, oh, she knows what show she's on. Like this, yeah. She's just going for it. Like she's happy to be like the most ridiculous person on the show. I mean, the burgers and Botox thing is the biggest example of just, you know, every
I don't know
word
if that's the biggest example. That's like seems minor in comparison to like I think of myself as like goth Barbie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I want my wedding dress in her
engagement party was wild
and, like,
too, which was in season two, which was shot at the same time as season three. It's kind of arbitrary how they did it, but the season two was like she had her engagement party and there was a zebra or something. She was like extremely extra, but apparently they also had to edit out a lot of her stuff because she went way too far. Like it was extremely a character and they had to like really cut around a lot of her like overacting and stuff and over inhabiting this role. So I can't even imagine what that would look like. Release the Christine cut is what I want to see.
Also in the final episode, not only does she get married, but she also shows Karamo from Queer Eye a house. And that is really fun because you think that presumably the reason he's on there is to do the Queer Eye thing of like having a really deep conversation. And in fact, they do sit down. He's like, tell me what's going on. And then there's no heart to heart. There's nothing there. It's just like, oh yeah, I fucking hate all the bitches at work. And then end of scene.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah, and he also, I think he's fun in that too, because he kind of lets loose and he's like, not the Karamo you know from Queer Eye. He's just kind of.
He doesn't have to be understanding and supportive. He can just be like, this is what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, she's interesting. I'm really curious about her husband, her rapidly acquired husband, who is apparently a former tech executive of some kind, but I don't know. Where?
Yeah, I think I know him though, so I was like, or not know him, but know who he is, which I sort of found puzzling.
I think he's just one of these guys who was like a very high paid engineer at a bunch of places, but like wouldn't necessarily be in the spotlight or in a founder position somewhere. But, he's definitely like a nerd who made a bunch of money and now is relatively.
I kind of relate to him as well, because he was at one point when they were doing the wedding planning meeting, he was like, so we're going to have a cake that's black inside and white frosting, but also like red blood on it. And she's like, yeah. And he was like, I'm sorry, I'm really trying to keep up or something.
One other thing I wanted to talk about was the kind of the formula of the show, because there was some discussion about like whether or not like online, not in the show itself, but like online about whether or not this is like a quote unquote real agency and real brokerage, which I think, I mean, it is a real brokerage. It's not super clear how, you know, I think almost all the cast members have also done acting and modeling. And so, you know, do they do much real estate when they're not filming? I don't know. But there's also a question of like, how scripted is it? I mean, and to me, it's like very, very obviously, like, you know, if not scripted, then certainly staged in certain ways. And there's a lot of scenes where you, for no reason, like no human being in this situation would start a conversation about this in this circumstance. But you can tell that the producer said, okay, now you need to go in and confront this person about this thing. Of which, like, probably the biggest is, so, I forget what's her, Heather, I think, she's tying back to HGTV, dating an HGTV star, which I didn't really realize was a thing, but, they've been doing a lot of, like, interviews, and in one, she's asked about Chrishell's divorce, and makes some sort of, like, bland comment, which then gets blown up into the headline. Which parenthetically, that's terrible journalism. You should never do that. But that happens a lot. And so at Christine's wedding, Mary decides to confront Heather about it and have this big scene. And I was just like clutching my head. I thought at this point I'd like build up calluses, right? Like I could deal with the show's drama, but I was just like, this is insane. This is completely insane. I cannot believe they're having this conversation right now. And then what Daryl was quoting earlier, then Davina just immediately starts saying, well, there's two sides to every story. I just don't understand why you can't acknowledge there's two sides to every story in talking about the divorce. And you're just like, this is...
Talking about... Yeah, like, the objective facts they know are that Chrishell got divorced... Like, he divorced her over text. And it's like... I think if it's Maya or one of them is like,
you lose your right matter. To the like, side of the story.
Yeah,
when you but also text.
Even the, like leaving that aside, it's like we're friends with her, and I think she says that explicitly. It's like we're friends with her. We don't know him at all. Like it's a very simple equation of like we're on her side. Like, and that's what I like about I think it was Maya, but that's what I like about her is like she has a really good way of just being like, I even know that this is a construct. Like I know that. Objectively, that's not even a real thing to do, is to have your friends backs. Like maybe that is incorrect, but it's also just the way the world works, and so why don't we just do it, right? Like I don't understand why you would go some other route. And they're both like, well, we don't know his side. And it's like, what are you doing? Like that.
It's also just like a self-importance thing. Like if you're gonna sit there and be like, oh, you know, for posterity's sake, like, I don't want to commit to a side because I really need to, because people are going to care what I had thought how I felt in this moment so much. Like, no, just be a friend, yo.
Yeah. And again, I think that speaks, I mean, definitely, like, Davina previously hadn't super registered with me as a character. And then in that CNS, definitely, you are the worst person. The worst person.
Which one's, like, Davina again?
I don't know.
She's brown. There's no way to actually differentiate them, if I ask.
Yeah, she's not blonde. I can tell
brown,
you
brown, straight hair. She's tall. I think she's the only one that doesn't have fake boobs. Again, in the category of should boobs. I say these things?
Right.
But
right. And just to be clear, one thing I do want to make explicit is that, like, they spend a lot of time talking about the work they've had done on the show. This is not us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not making assumptions. Like, they're literally like, oh, my boobs are saline. Yours are silicone. Like, you're going to die because silicone boobs are being recalled, you stupid bitch. You know, like, that is the discourse.
That's an actual conversation they had. So,
as they're getting drinks served to them that are, like, being lit aflame, and then they get their palms red, and, like, you got, I can't, you guys, I literally can't.
But that, so she's the one also who's taking on that $77 million listing that the Oppenheims don't think that she should do. If you remember that storyline,
yeah, I remember that storyline, and kind of were on their side a little bit, but then all the girls hate it. Was like a lose-lose situation because obviously, yeah, the money would be great, but will you ever sell it? And then all the girls hated her and, like, didn't take her seriously because they thought she only got it because she had slept with him before, but then also he didn't even want her to do it.
No, she didn't sleep with him. It was Mary who slept with him.
So it was tied, but they would bring up this grievance at the same time that they're talking about this house stuff.
Because there's the subtext of, like, she gets all the good listings, and whenever there's one.
So Davina finally got a good listing, and now Jason's trying to shut it down. And it's bigger than any of Jason's listings.
But, and Jason, there's a really fun moment when Jason, like, celebrates. He's like, I sold a $44 million house. And then, like, in the Chiron at the bottom, they, like, list, like, sale price, $42 million. Because the buyer underpaid by $2 million, like, countered with a $2 million less offer, and I'm like, you didn't, because if the house sold for $42 million, it's not a $44 million house. It just made me really
right,
mad.
Just because you just because the owner at one point decided to call it a $44 million house does not make it so.
Yeah. I mean, $2 million, potatoes, he sold
right.
It's
fun to be at a price range where $2 million is essentially peanuts.
Yeah, but that struck me as a very Oppenheim thing to do, based on their character throughout the show, was to inflate. Like, they always, like, slightly inflate things. They're very egotistical, weird little guys, and they bother the hell out of me.
They're salespeople, too. I mean, that's their job, is to be like, oh, this is better than it actually is, right?
Yeah. Weirdly, like, you talk about how everybody's bad. Those two bother me the most out of anybody on the show. Like, I think they are the worst people on the show of anyone, but I mean, it's partly that they've done this whole thing where they're, like, clearly, like, oh, sex sells, let's just stock our high-priced real estate with, like, a bunch of hot chicks or whatever, and they act like the worst masculine bro dudes at every possible opportunity, right? So, like, they're just totally shitty. Yeah, and I think they're doing it, I think they're the worst because they're not even, like, they're pretending they're above it, and they're kind of like, well, we're not participating, but, like, any action that they do take is shitty and seems to be shitty, right? I mean, sometimes they do, like, they really try to paint the picture of, like, this is the family that we have here, and we, like, do all kinds of cool things together, which I think is, again, mostly for the show, and also just kind of disingenuous, even if they were doing that for real. But yeah, I guess it's just LA, though. Like, this is what I was thinking when Jordan was talking about it. Like, feels to me like an accurate portrayal of, like, at least this economic class of LA, right? So
yeah,
I mean, it feels real. I will say that it is. So I grew up in suburban LA, not near the Hollywood Hills, but, like, I don't know, like a 30-minute drive from the Hollywood Hills, and my parents were fairly affluent. But not at this level of affluence, right? And there's also the thing of, like, I think there are probably some wealthy people who are probably bad in other ways, but they aren't bad in the specific ways around LA culture. But I think that the culture that's being represented in the show is a real part of LA culture, for sure.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. That's one of my biases.
It is, but I think like that was the thing. It's like watching the show is learning to watch something where I dislike everything that's happening on the screen, but I'm also still enjoying it for some reason. And I guess that's really what I wanted to ask Daryl about, because I think about some other things that we've watched, and for some reason the one that stuck in my mind is when we were talking about like the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix, and this idea of, to me it was like, oh, it's, I think that like I, you know, have no real opinion about Taylor Swift as a person because I just don't think I know, but like I'm interested in seeing the machinery of like celebrity and all of that, and you were just like, no, all of this machinery is bad, this is all terrible, we should not be fascinated by it. And then then it's interesting to me that, and I think in other shows there's a thing where you are the most kind of like, this show is bad and you should feel bad for liking it, kind of. And so I'm curious, do you feel any trouble?
How do you reconcile all that judgmentalism as you watch Selling Sunset, essentially?
I don't know. I probably just don't. I mean, I also like the new iteration of The Hills.
He's comfortable with his biases.
Yeah, yeah. That, I don't know. That one just felt so much like a weird... the Taylor Swift one.
Wait,
felt
are we talking
like,
about Americana? Or are we talking about Reputation?
Not the concert one.
Reputation is the live concert, and then, or not live, but like the concert, and then Americana was the documentary.
It was the documentary thing. That one just felt so bad to me because it was like one individual's efforts to like really like create their own sort of like false narrative, I guess. I feel like with these things, it's more like, it's somebody else doing it, right?
A group effort.
Yeah, and it's Adam DeVillo doing it, and like maybe they have input and influence, but like ultimately it lays bare a lot of the stuff that maybe they don't even realize they're laying bare about how they interact and how vapid they are and shit like that. But like, I don't know. It's slightly different to me. It's also, honestly, I think a lot of it is like the way that these are shot. I think he did a really good job of pioneering that format, which is like the really beautifully shot reality series, mm-hmm. right? And
you can definitely feel like Laguna Beach and The Hills and all that stuff when you're watching it.
Yeah, and even just establishing shots, like when people arrive at restaurants and things like that, like they look really, really good. And he did an interview recently and he was talking about like, yeah, we'll do multiple takes. Like if we don't get the shot, we'll do multiple takes, like of people walking into rooms and things like that. Like we try not to as much as possible, but we'll do it to get it. And I think that shows. And I think like that we've talked about this show too, and it's very, very different in a lot of ways, but like Terrace House has a similar vibe, right? And I think that they actually owe a lot to like the early MTV shows of like, of how they're shot as well. And yeah, I think that makes a big difference, honestly.
I mean, I will say that as much as, again, I sort of had this sort of, there was a hate watch quality to the way I watched this show, there are definitely many, many moments where I was like, oh yeah, LA is great. Mm. We should move back to LA.
Yeah. It does really make LA seem awesome. I mean, the houses are obviously like out of reach and absurd, so that plays into it, but like, yeah, even
oh, Daryl, are you not getting paid enough to buy those houses? Oh, it's totally within reach for me.
Even the throwaway condos that they mention but don't actually talk about.
Jordan, did you at least like the houses?
Some of them feel a little bit too much for me.
Oh yeah,
but like, I mean, too much for me. Too much money for me, for sure. But also, like, too much glitz and glam.
Too over the top.
Like, over the top, yeah. And I mean, like, sometimes it's nice to have, like, aspirational content is sometimes nice. Like, I think of shows like World's Most Extraordinary Homes, which some of them are, like, totally bonkers and I would never even want to step foot in them. But a lot of them are really cool and you're just like, oh, man, like, fantastic, you know? I'd love to, like, Airbnb there for 4 days or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like sometimes when you mix that kind of aspirational content with, like, I mean, I see, I kind of see like everything that's wrong with extreme wealth is represented in this cast. And so like it loses the delight of the aspirational piece of it really quickly, because it's like, oh, if I was living in that house, I would probably be like a terrible person, like these terrible people, and give a shit about burgers and Botox. And it's like, you can't actually enjoy the delight of that piece of it because it's like so tainted by their terrible personalities.
Yeah. The burgers and Botox is a particularly egregious example, because it's like, that work that was effective, like, because people were, these people who are stunningly well off or whatever were like, oh, but I get some free Botox if I go to this thing. Like, sweet. Like, that'll knock a few. Like, my regular, because in my regular budget is Botox, and now I get that for free along with some burgers. Like, it's a gross, stupid.
It's like something that they think of Botox as like, you know, getting a soda at the convenience store.
Yeah.
You know? And to be like, oh, free.
Yeah.
Like, stop it. Yeah. Buy your soda.
Well, I guess the other thing is watching it now in the middle of the pandemic is that on the one, at first I was like, oh, maybe this is like a document of this lifestyle that is now over. And like a document of pre-pandemic life. And then I realized, oh no, for people at this income level, like very little has changed.
Yeah, nothing's like, changed.
It's, you know.
They probably have like a rapid COVID test that they just take every night.
Yeah. They have a vaccine already.
They have the vaccine. They have their own scientist. Oh,
write the story. And yeah, I mean, this is, you know, they've been doing this for the last year while we've been in the pandemic. Maybe they haven't been shooting the show, but you know.
But I like to think that like if I had that much money, I would use it very differently, but you never know, which is probably part of the why, like, it's so easy to hate on super rich people, because it just seems like their problems and their concerns and the way that they spend their money and all of it just seems so worthless and stupid. Yeah. But there's also a level of jealousy, I think, involved whenever you're watching someone super rich.
Oh, for sure.
And, like, I would do it better, right? But then would you actually do it better? And I don't know.
Yeah. There are very few examples of people who did do it better, too. So that's worth keeping in mind.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
There are examples, but yes, they are definitely in the minority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Selling Sunset?
Can't wait for season 4. Gotta get on that.
It's probably going to come out in like 2 weeks based on the release schedule they're on. Haven't they just like blasted them out?
They have, but they recorded the last two seasons together, and then I think they just artificially broke them up for the sake of driving up the drama, because it was, everybody kind of knew the Chrishell divorce was happening if you were paying attention to the gossip sphere, because it was a story because of Justin and his like fame with the terrible show. This Is Us. Yeah. Couldn't remember the name of that awful,
that
awful
Smallville.
Show. Right. Yeah.
Also
yeah, yeah.
An awful show.
Yep. In a different way. Yeah. But so they don't have anything in the can. Like, they don't have anything ready to go. So this one could be a while. It'd be interesting if they did a pandemic one. I mean, I did actually do, like, we were house shopping during the pandemic, which was a very interesting experience, but not nearly as glamorous, I think, as the rest of the show.
Did you need to renovate your bathrooms too? Were the bathrooms just a little outdated?
Oh no.
The one that overlooked the tennis court?
We saw
championship size tennis court.
I'll tell you, the bracket we were shopping in, it was still we're very lucky, but we did see a house that had no sink in the only bathroom in the house. They were just like,
wow,
there's no sink. And our real estate agent was like, what? And then, like, the real estate agent was like, I've never seen a place that doesn't have a sink.
So it's not like
you just
got to
go into
thing.
The bathroom, like you have your toothbrushes in the kitchen, essentially.
Well, it had a like a tub with a like articulated, you know, like a pull down handle. And the assumption was, I think, that you pulled down the handle and then just like did your stuff into the bathtub or whatever you needed to do sink wise.
Wow. I'm glad you didn't go with that one. You didn't go with that one, right?
No, because we were priced out on that one. We actually didn't get that one because it sold for way more than we had. Yeah.
What in the world?
That's amazing.
But real estate's bonkers. People get like really attached to their property and their homes, and they like overprice them. Because I've been looking here in Florida, just like casually, obviously. I haven't gone to like view anything, but I've just been looking on Zillow and stuff like that. And you can tell like there'll be like a really reasonably priced house for like 210 or something, you know, like the right square footage, the right neighborhood. Like, oh, these people have a good head on their shoulders. And then you'll see like an absolute fucking dump for like 390. And you're like, how, what real estate broker told you that you could do this? Like, you can't, have you looked on Zillow? You can't do this. Your house is broken. No.
Yeah, ultimately, they just have to defer to whoever it is. So if they have a weird client, yeah, for sure. There's nothing they can really do.
My scale is so messed up by watching this show that I'm just like, 390, that's basically free. So yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, exactly. You do get that. Yeah, it's
just
like,
look at your bank account and then it'll bring you back down. Basically free. I'm short. $80,000 for the down payment.
All right. On that note, I will remind our listeners they can always email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. They can also follow us on Twitter at originalcontent. We always appreciate it when you subscribe and leave us positive reviews on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Jordan and Daryl, I missed you guys. Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Happy weekend.